Hey now, it's Mike Gilbert, host of the Mike and JD Show, right here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Join JD by God Oliva and myself every Thursday night live on the Voices of Wrestling YouTube channel at 11:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time as we stay up all night discussing all the hottest stories in professional wrestling. You can also check us out right here on the Voices of Wrestling podcasting feed, or you can subscribe to the Mike and JD Show feed. Now, enjoy the show.
Close your eyes and imagine what you'll look like 6 months from now. How's your hair look? The same? Now picture how your hair would look if you started using Hims. If you're picturing the same you as before, but with much thicker and fuller hair, you'd be correct. What can happen in 3 to 6 months? You could pick up a new hobby and get not that good at it yet. You could do about half of your New Year's resolution. You could learn a few songs on the piano or pick up bass guitar. Or you could start seeing thicker, fuller hair regrowth through Hims. Not bad for just 3 to 6 months. Men, if you're starting to notice your hair thinning when you look in the mirror, you're not alone. Life just gets busier and busier, and it can feel like there's not enough time in the day to do something about it. So, try Hims Hair Loss Solutions. You can avoid jumping through a bunch of frustrating hoops and get access to treatment without even leaving your home. Hims provides you with the convenient access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from the comfort of your couch. Hims makes treating hair loss simple with doctor-trusted options and clinically proven ingredients, like finasteride and minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. Choose from personalized, chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatments to find what works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online, so there are no uncomfortable doctor visits. Answer a few questions and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. No insurance is needed, and one low price covers everything from treatments to ongoing care. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, and they can help you get your confidence back too with visibly thicker and fuller hair. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Results may vary based on studies on topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
Why choose a Sleep Number smart bed?
Can I make my side softer?
Can I make my side firmer?
Can we sleep cooler?
Sleep Number does that. Cools up to 8 times faster and lets you choose your ideal comfort on either side. Your Sleep Number setting. It's the Sleep Number Everything Smart Bed Sale. Every smart bed and base are on sale during our Memorial Day event. Up to 50% off, plus free home delivery. Limited time. Exclusively the Sleep Number store near you. Learn more at sleepnumber.com.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Professional wrestling, well, we like professional wrestling too. This week in the news, you had made WrestleMania plans. You may need to change them. In fact, you do need to change them. The lazy river of wrestling criticism, previews of Saturday night's main event, Battleground, and Double or Nothing. And Invader Club this week, Chavo Guerrero Jr. versus Ultimo Dragon, Nove's pick from Spring Stampede 1998. I am Jeff Hawkins. He is Chris Novembrino. I got to spend my global wellness day off today, traveling to Orange County to get allergy tested. And it's fascinating to me how something so little can drive your body insane. Because this is, they put a drop of this stuff that's been diluted 10x with water and just scrape with a hypodermic. That's it, scrape. and I'm spending, and I'm watching the hives come up, and then it's like I have to spend the next hour and a half in a chair because I'm a little woozy. I don't necessarily want to drive, but I don't feel terrible, but I'm a little nervous. And the worst part of this, Chris, I think you've probably been through something like this. If you've had recurring issues, you start to imagine having those issues from time to time. Like, you worry to the point where it's like, oh no, here, is this what I think?
Well, I had the mystery skin ailment thing that caused like all the skin on my face to fall off about 7 years ago. Or like large chunks of skin to fall off my face, and then it just mysteriously went away one day, and they never figured out what it was. So yeah, no, I'm aware. Occasionally I'll see red spots and wonder if it's the start of a new nightmare.
Yeah, it's like I'm grabbing my EpiPen just to be safe. You know, even though they go, you know, we have EpiPens here. I go, yeah, I know, but you may not be in the room at the time. It's one of those just, like, I went to get lunch, and I just started feeling lightheaded, and I just went, I can't drive home just yet. So I actually went back to the doctor's office, sat down for a while, go, okay, I'm gonna leave, got some Benadryl and made it home. But it was a little I was a little worried about being touch and go, but yeah, no, it's official, I was allergic to what I thought I was. And now the fun process of trying to get arbitration begins, because
We here on this show love arbitration. We think very highly of it as a process, yes. Clearly preferable to normal courts, as has always been our traditional stated position on this show.
As one law firm told me, well, if you had died, then there'd be money in this case.
That's a damn sham. I could be doing Shake Them Noves with a new enhanced budget. Laser light shows in the background.
Chris, if you pitched it, got a host, I'll give this show to you and go away, given the just the amount of grief.
No. You're gonna love my concept. I call it Cyberhawk. It is a new AI-generated version of Jeffrey Hawkins.
Oh, no.
I do this show with every week. Only. He is also a transformer, like Megatron.
See, I thought you were going to input it with, like, the worst opinions on things ever, and this would be AI Hawkins, and all of a sudden I become Alex Jones or something. And you're hosting with an AI – you're hosting a wrestling pod with an AI Alex Jones in some way. But it's an AI Alex Jones that knows something about wrestling. Yeah.
Oh,
God. No, I'm not giving you idea. Yeah, you record that for your Instagram. I want no part of it. Anyways, the top news.
You ever think Richard Linklater regrets having Alex Jones on Waking Life?
I didn't even realize he had him on Waking Life.
Yeah, there's like a whole big segment on Waking Life, which is an otherwise fine movie, now ruined by an extended appearance of Alex Jones screaming conspiracy theories.
You get a lot of that, though, in hindsight. You can't view it 20 years in the future or whatever, but the answer to most of your questions is money. I have said this time and time again. Well, WWE officials contacted sports and tourism officials in New Orleans on May 22nd that they were canceling announced plans for WrestleMania in the city in 2026. Planned dates are running Mania at the Caesars Superdome on 11-12, along with Raw, SmackDown, NXT Stand and Deliver at the Smoothie King Center and other events as well in the city were announced at a press conference in February by Dwayne Johnson. The new plan, while not officially announced, is to run Allegiant Stadium and the T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas like this year and move the shows back 1 week with WrestleMania on April 18th and 19th. Let me guess, that's Easter again. WWE officials and other sources have not spoken to us, which is Wrestling Observer, or to Brandon Thurston, who actually broke this story, or returned messages as to why and the process of what happened. However, those in Las Vegas confirmed that they have reserved the stadium for shows on the 2 days, and the plan is to run the city. Decision was made partially because this year's WrestleMania made so much money overall in Las Vegas from all sources that they could not make that level of money in New Orleans. The other is that the company loved having it in Las Vegas because key TKO executives live there and are there, and Nick Khan grew up there. The plan is now to run WrestleMania on a regular basis in Las Vegas, not necessarily every year, but frequently. The idea is that the city wants to have a major destination sports event every year, And by definition, they are looking at the Super Bowl, the Final Four, the College Football National Championship Final, and WrestleMania, so would be looking for Mania any year that they don't have one of those events. New Orleans will host the 2026 edition of Money in the Bank with the date and location yet to be revealed. It's going to be Smoothie King. Brandon Thurston noted that this week, July's UFC 318 was announced for the Smoothie King Center as part of a new agreement between the city and WWE UFC owners TKO, alluding to future WWE events perhaps being a part of that. I'll get your initial thoughts and then I'll retort.
Well, yeah, Jeff, I think it is impressive that someone, anyone, and in this case a company, has finally grown a big enough pair of balls to stick it to poor people, black people, and Jesus all on one day.
Would you like to elaborate on that?
Well, look, I think someone with a little bit of understanding of socioeconomics here in America understands that there's a bit of an economic disparity and a demographic disparity between New Orleans and Las Vegas, and also the choice to keep WrestleMania almost inexplicably on the whole Jesus Day of Easter seems to be like a
let me confirm
up the calendar here. I want to make sure I'm
Easter
on time.
26 no it's April 5th on
it's April 5th. Okay, so we're not sticking it to Jesus
this. No, we're not sticking it to the Jesus.
So just poor people and black people. Well, again, yeah. That's still it takes courage.
I a few years ago at least, I proposed that yes, they should have a major home base for WrestleMania, and it should be a tourist destination. But this is also wherein the disparity between what I think WWE wants and what WWE brass want are completely different.
Vegas feels low rent, right? Like, let's ruminate on Vegas. Vegas compared to, Chicago, New York, Los Angeles, a more major metro feels very, you know, B-level.
I don't even think it's that for me. I think it's the difference between you market your company as events for the entire family to go to. And Las Vegas is mostly 95% a city for adults, which is why the brass and the talent like it there. You can party, you can drink, you can gamble. I thought they should have made Orlando the destination. I had a blast going to WrestleMania in Orlando because on days I wasn't going to indie wrestling events or whatever, I could go to Disney, I could go to Universal, I could go to Publix, which is a fantastic grocery chain. But nevertheless, there's a lot to do in Orlando for families with children, which I thought.
But now I think you've identified the problem here, Jeff. You know what all that is? All those wonderful things you listed. Market competition for the dollary do. These, if I am at Six Flags, if I am at Magic Mountain, then I am not at some other WWE functionary event. And my whole goal as WWE is to have you in here and doing some sort of WWE thing every day until you're absolutely exhausted and ideally eating some food at a WWE event.
So you think this is a funnel strategy?
I think to a certain extent that, like, that's part of the appeal here too. That what you cite as a virtue might be viewed as a negative by someone else inside the company.
I also do love just the general laziness of, well, TKO really enjoyed it because the top brass didn't have to go far from home. They can sleep in their own beds at night. And of course, there's also now the underlying, did WWE/TKO cut the knees out from Dwayne, who really made it a big thing to announce this, even though he's a board member and stuff. I don't
There might be more synergies to be had here, too. Like, for example, WWE works out a partnership with one of these major hotels, and they make it WrestleMania HQ, and you stay at that hotel, and every night they have special matches down in the lobby or some other thing to make the whole WrestleMania experience that much more immersive and complete.
Well, they kind of did that a little bit with the roast. They had it at the Talent Hotel, which I believe was I forgot the name of it. It's not like a Harrah's or an MGM property. I don't think it's one of those other properties. I think it's a Red Rocks.
But I could totally see them wanting to explore some sort of synergy with one of the hotels to make like a hotel WrestleMania.
You know, if they had if they could do that, if they could really pull off the theming of it, that would be something.
Right. You know, I mean, especially if that was linked with a casino and you could potentially go and gamble and end up at a table with one of the wrestlers or whatever and have a shooting craps with, I don't know who, Ty Dillinger or whoever it is. Right. You can have one of those experiences.
Ty Dillinger.
Perfect tens. He wanted to roll perfect tens.
I don't know. I stayed at Park MGM for Double or Nothing last year. I got to gamble.
That was a solid joke, Jeff. I came up with it on the spot.
It was. I just kind of, I had my mind on, you know, gambling with wrestlers isn't all that exciting because the wrestlers are usually losing and getting very, very angry. Like a buddy of mine.
Sitting at a blackjack table with Jake the Snake would rule. You're not going to talk
about Jake
the
Snake, maybe, because he's losing all his money and stuff.
Yes, and he's getting angry. And he's like
my buddy was sitting there with one of the gun club members at Double or Nothing. As his night proceeded to get worse and worse at the blackjack table. it's okay. I mean, having been to Vegas for a wrestling event, it's fine. But I also want to do other things other than wrestling events in Vegas. Like, I went to go see a concert and things of that nature. But those are adult things. WrestleMania is so heavily geared towards children.
Yeah, but the person we're trying to fish the money out of is dad's wallet. Yeah. So we need dad to be a pretty big mark to take his kids all the way to WrestleMania. So you need to have that thing of, oh, maybe I could be, if I'm at the WrestleMania hotel, I can go and gamble with WWF legends, not even active wrestlers. I can see the people from my generation at the tables or whatever. Maybe I run into Booker T or Glacier.
Glacier would be AEW, but that'd be Glacier, funny. But
Glacier transcends any one federation.
You run into Brian Knobs, who tries to hit you up for 20 because this is his moment. I just need 20 bucks to get whole, man.
All right, getting lectured on the street by Mr. Backlund about being a degenerate gambler.
WWE and Ticketmaster have officially withdrawn ticket sales and canceled the Tuesday, May 27th NXT live broadcast from the Yuengling Center in Tampa. This was a case of overextending your goodwill, methinks, especially past the holiday weekend. The Yuengling Center is going to have Saturday night's main event. They're going to have NXT Battleground, and they're going to have Raw. But I guess that ticket sales for that Tuesday normal NXT were fairly non-existent, so they canceled it.
You know, this is, I think, an avoidable issue for WWE, where if you had a hot weekly NXT product right now, we wouldn't be reading this headline. It's the fact that the weekly TV is so scattered and all over the place, and the quality has been so scattered and all over the place, and the universe is kind of not worth seeing right now. You know what I mean? You could just kind of hit the big notes and kind of move on.
I'll push back on this. I think NXT could be hot and you couldn't fill an arena like Yuengling for NXT standard Tuesday night post special event thing. I think it has to be a PLE, like a stand and deliver. And I just, it's one of those things where I think NXT right now plays well to the smaller crowds. You know, it you get a small building, you pack it, and then it feels hotter. I just, this is an arena show. And on a random Tuesday, they're not there yet, not with this level and not with poaching all the people who are going up to the main roster now.
Yeah, well, I mean, other options here too is, you know, you had, if you had more main roster crossover right now on NXT too. I mean, I go back to the world here because part of building the world out is you could be bringing over some people from the main roster and kind of helping juice some energy for that. I mean, look, if you're not using
or if this was a TNA joint show, maybe.
Right.
Maybe.
You do TNA, if you have Rey Mysterio, he's not doing much on your main roster right now. Just having him on the card will at least, you know, put 50 people in the stands, you know?
Yeah.
Like he's worth something. They've got people to draw a house. They're just not using NXT very effectively right now, in my estimations.
Backtracking from last week, a story I forgot to put on here. Willow Nightingale re-signing with AEW. I think this is a perfect move for both of them. There was chat that it's like, well, Tony's going to have to pay for Willow to stay, otherwise NXT may poach her. And I'm like, I don't think Willow Nightingale is NXT's or is WWE's type per se. They could sign her just to sit on her, but I don't think anybody would be, look, WWE has different things that they want out of wrestlers.
And they got a lot of plates that they're spinning right now.
Yes.
It's not even really Willow Nightingale. It's in particular here, it's me trying to see a path for her where you're moving people like Tiffany Stratton and Stephanie Vaquer, who are all very talented people. Like, you know, do not let the cosmetics get in the way of the talent level right now. They got a lot of talented young women on the roster here that they are doing stuff with and bringing, you know, where does Willow fit into that? Well, if you're moving Stephanie out of NXT, I guess you could bring Willow in there and see if, you know, she could connect as a fan favorite champion. But you'd have to really put the spotlight, you know what I mean? Like, it's not a clear model. They got a lot of female talent right now on that roster.
She being that veteran was signed to do jobs, and maybe she gets a main roster run, you know, as a thank you, much like in the Dakota Kai, Mia Yim type of scenario.
But yeah, you got talented people like Lola Vice trapped in mid-card hell right now. It is not a clear, easy ladder to climb up for any new person coming in.
And Lola's one of your homegrown versus somebody you're bringing in. So that still matters in WWE,
yeah,
despite,
does.
You know, whatever. I mean, they look at Stephanie Vaquer and they go, well, we're the ones making her a star. So they'll delude themselves like that, too. So, you know, you never know. But I just didn't see Willow fitting in terms of what the cosmetics of what especially NXT wants. You know, they want the college athlete who does well at their combine, you know, and they're running a gym, a PE program over there for the most part with some theater classes. So
yeah, it's the power plant with theater.
Yeah. And then injury wise, if you watched Raw, you saw this. I screamed when I saw it. Zoe Stark.
Oof. Yeah.
Knee injury, gonna be out for a while. This is the same knee she injured before. According to Brian Alvarez, it looked like Kyrie was kind of out of position for the move and then got there and then things happened.
It felt like re-watching it, it looked like Zoe just didn't come off the top well. The land obviously is what did the big damage there, but like she didn't seem to have good lift or it seemed like maybe two things went wrong. Like, there was something wrong with the jump and something wrong with the landing.
I was just noting, I don't think she wears the knee brace anymore that she was wearing when she first came back. And then she got some heat because that move that she does with the knee, she caught Becky
She caught
flush.
Someone in the eye, yeah.
Yeah, she caught Becky flush with the brace. So she decided to not use it any longer once she got strengthened up enough. And, you know, to me, look, I still wear my knee brace if I do things like skiing, and it's been like 18 years since I got knee surgery or whatever. Knees never quite fully heal sometimes, and especially just she's like, a year and a half or 2 years out from her surgery. You know, Seth's an anomaly. I mean, I don't think he used to wear his under his gear.
But I was going to say he probably wears some sort of,
he wears a sleeve. I'm sure he wears
some sort of compression sleeve. Yeah.
Um, best of luck to her, man. I knee injuries always get me in the feels. But that'll do it for the news section now. The lazy river of wrestling criticism. Whatever we watch, whatever we had time for. Cards from each of the three things. So let's start with Saturday night's main event. Four match card, NBC, primetime, as opposed to, I think it still should be on at 11:30, but that's me. Damian Priest versus Drew McIntyre in a steel cage match, Chris.
I think this will be pretty darn fun. I think that Drew has transitioned very well into this upper mid-card role, and he still does it with some passion. And even though this feud doesn't really do much for me and hasn't done much for me, it's like both Damian Priest and Rhea Ripley have no life and no personality and no nothing since they left the Judgment Day. Like, the only thing that was cool is that they were in that group. They had cool t-shirts. I think Priest wins this and we move on. I think the stun lock ends.
I think the opposite happens. I think McIntyre wins this and maybe Priest turns heel and we move on.
Honestly, that might save Priest at this point.
John Cena versus R-Truth.
Look, you know, it is
murder death.
You know, I think that this will be more entertaining than like first blush. And I also don't think this will be murder death because John Cena does not do the matches that we think he should do as a heel. I think this will be overly competitive. And I am with you. I think that this should be murder death in the same way that Randy Orton should have been tortured in front of the crowd. R-Truth should be an example. He should be, you know, like John Cena should have disdain for this clown and want to hurt him.
No, I recanted right as you were talking about because I realized what this is going to be. This is going to be R-Truth thinks he can help John Cena.
Yep.
And he's going to be deluded up until a point. And that point may be Randy Orton coming in and interfering. But at some point, R-Truth's going to realize he can't, that John Cena's not his friend. And that's when he's going to lose.
But first, that first part of like trying to save his childhood hero is going to go on agonizingly long.
Yes. Then, and little Jimmy will be around and all that other stuff.
And then once it becomes manifest that he can't, he is going to have a prolonged fire up spot, Jeff.
Yes.
It's going to go on a minute. He's going to get near falls and shit. Stuff that should not be happening. It absolutely should not be happening. I am with you. This should be murder death. Like, John Cena, R-Truth should go into that, and John Cena should take him to the outside and immediately move him, in, like, be throwing him into the steel chairs. And, like, basically be like, shut up, joke man. I'm sick of your jokes, joke man. And, you know, doing everything outside of the ring you can do within the realm of reason, rolling back in, you know, just to break the 10 count and then continuing the assault on the outside of the ring. That's not going to be what's happening. It's going to be the format you and I foresee.
CM Punk and Sami Zayn versus Seth Rollins and Braun Breaker. Paul Heyman's been doing some pretty darn good work here, especially kind of almost tipping that he is basically Braun Breaker's guy more than Seth Rollins. But this one is going to be all about the baby faces. I think Seth and Braun probably win this.
Yeah.
I am still going with, I think they are turning Sammy to join Seth and Braun. This is what it feels like to me. I don't know. I loved our conversation last week about this, but there is something off about this Sami Zayn build.
There is, but I don't know if it's just that they don't really know where Seth and Braun are going right now. like, what's the next chapter? I don't know that they necessarily know where the next chapter is. So Sammy might just be incidental inclusion.
Yeah, Sammy is a plot device right now.
Right,
so.
I can't make up my mind on that. I'm kind of with you. You see him out in more black gear and stuff, but is that more just a matchup with Punk's look, or is that belying something? Sammy, as a heel, kind of sucks. So I don't want that either. You know, it was one thing when he was in the Bloodline and it was like he was like a doofus heel.
Yes.
But him as like a heel isn't intriguing to me, really, especially not with this unit, because I don't think he's going to add anything to the character dynamic either. So, no, I'm with you. Punk and Zane lose. Maybe we get the reveal of who the next person is.
Zane just feels like a MacGuffin in this entire story because we're trying to get to CM Punk versus this other two, this gruesome, awesome twosome here. There's a third member lurking. I just don't know who it is yet.
I don't know who it is yet. I mean, even the Gun, we finally did have the Gunther Seth interaction this week, which was intriguing.
And in the main event, Jey Uso versus Logan Paul. I loved the Gunther segment from last week. I love that he came in and goes, "I don't respect you, Logan Paul. I respect Pat McAfee."
That rule. That was awesome. Yes. I think Gunther very rapidly is becoming one of the most interesting and multi-dimensional characters that they have on this show, because he has a clear ethos, and it is a consistent ethos of things that he cares about and values, and that makes him very intriguing. He can be
the it's all in his mantra. The ring is sacred to me.
Yes, right. And that could be in that Bret Hart level of too obnoxious, or in that Bret Hart level of, yeah, I love this thing. I love this sport, and I don't like it when people make fun of this sport. And I certainly. I thought the interaction between Gunther and Rollins, just the idea of like for example, Gunther versus Breaker. There's a match I'm interested in.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, right? Like, I mean, even just like Gunther all of a sudden being positioned as the unstoppable force against this new Paul Heyman faction, where he just like has kind of a disdain for that. I think the promos will be there. Gunther and Heyman. Gunther and Rollins, clearly they've got some real good chemistry. To get back to Uso and Logan Paul here, I think Uso retains. I mean, he's still going to be a short-term champion, but Logan Paul's not the guy.
Logan Paul's not the guy, and you could have a great match within this. If Jey is motivated, and if the shenanigans from Logan's crew aren't there, but this is totally gonna be the I show speed. There's that jerk Jeff with the brass knuckles again to give them to Logan Paul.
I hate them.
I don't like them either.
They suck. They don't make the matches better. I mean, they don't just have like heel heat for me. They have this like, go away. Every time you guys show up, you ruin what... Like, look, Logan Paul's an asshole, but damn, the guy can wrestle.
Yes.
He is good, and he could definitely put together an entertaining match, and I've seen it. And these doofuses that he has been bringing to get them a payday just make every single match of his, whenever they show up, less good.
Yeah, and it's just going to be that asshole Jeff, and I just... internalize it. But yeah, no, this could be good. It won't be good because it's Saturday night's main event, so it's going to be all about the story. And yeah, I'm with you. I think Logan Paul is champion. Be interesting. But oh, by the way, floated but rejected a Travis Scott versus iShow Speed match. Which, yeah, no bueno. No thank you. Anything else on the main roster you want to go over before we move on?
I mean, who rejected it? Did Travis Scott reject it? Because
No. WWE said, no, we're not doing that.
Oh, I mean, they should have done it.
Creative.
They should have done it in iShow Speed. They should have just told iShow Speed, you have one job out here tonight. Just hit him flush a few times if you
iShow Speed is getting put through a table by Jey Uso jumping off the top rope through it over by
Okay, out. So I think we are seeing the makings of the next chapter of the CM Punk thing in this. I think Jimmy and Jey are going to have their reunion finally. And the next chapter of the CM Punk thing is going to be CM Punk and Jey Uso versus the Rollins faction. And like maybe when we finally see that third member, there's Jimmy as the other person. So it's Punk and the Usos versus Seth Rollins, Braun Breaker in the third.
Might be Jimmy. Oh, God, help us. We're going to move on in order of importance. So we'll go to NXT Battleground next. Six matches announced. Starting with Hank and Tank and Josh Briggs versus the culling of Brooks Jensen, Nico Vance, and Sean Spears with Izzy Dame. I thought we just saw this, but maybe it was another six-man that I'm thinking. It was Dark State. That's right.
Yes. You forgot about Pants Guy.
This won't be much better.
No.
But I think Hank and Tank and Josh Briggs win this one versus the culling because they lost against Dark State. It's going to be that easy.
I think the culling win. I think Hank, Tank, and Briggs lose so that the culling gets set up for a tag match against Hank and Tank.
Yeah, and maybe Josh Briggs goes on a heel journey and they bring back his friend from Japan and they go on a heel run this time. That's a possibility.
Yeah, right. Like it seems like Briggs' story right now is he's no good to nobody. And that might actually, maybe he goes full singles and he's a heel now. Which would be an improvement for him.
I don't know the exact order, so I'm going to put them in the order I think they're going to be in, or at least in terms of order of importance, in terms of stories they're going to tell. Sol Ruka versus Kalani Jordan for the NXT Women's North American title. It'll be a decent match. I think Sol wins, and there'll be a lot of the Zarya drama within.
Yes, I think there is a lot of Zarya drama within. I was very confused by the finish of this week's match as to where we're going with the story ultimately.
Yes.
I mean, I'm still hoping this ends up the way you and I were calling it last week, which is Zarya and Sol both go heel.
But we have Kalani Jordan going heel too, allegedly.
Right. And I mean, she's been working as a heel this whole time, which has been the weird tension in this. So I don't know.
God, she is in limbo right now because I thought they had something with the, if you mention Michigan State, she turns rabidly, you know, paranoid and tries to, yeah, but God, this is interminable is what this women's division is right now, even though I like some people.
Tedious.
In it.
No, like everything is very tedious. And I'm with you. There's a lot of talented people, as I mentioned earlier, but.
But the character stuff stinks right now.
Oh, it's
in
so
that women's
bad.
Division.
You know, and I mean, leading the way, as much as I love her, Stephanie Vaquer's character is atrocious.
Look, they followed up the Tatum Paxley angle with a worse Tatum Paxley because she's still crying over the people who left her. And it's like, we can't mention that because we don't mention that we fired people on this show. And it's just, we'll get to Stephanie in a second. Tony D'Angelo versus Stax Lorenzo. Okay. Tony D'Angelo's probably going to, or it's going to, oh no, Luca Crucifino's going to show up and turn heel on Tony too. That's what's going to happen.
Stax wins. Yeah, right. Because, I mean, the where's Luca has been a thing. Or even Rizzo. Rizzo might actually turn on Tony.
Tony's going to go through that whole thing that Chase did on The Sopranos where he wakes up as a salesman at a convention in Las Vegas and is just walking around and NXT will call it high art, but it'll be poorly done. You watch. He's going to have an existential crisis and they're going to think it's like The Sopranos. Oh
yes.
My God.
No. I think Stax wins because the entire family turns on Tony.
Yes.
And the argument the following week is Tony, listen to your promo. Let me go back and listen to your promo. It was always about you. Like, even right down to the, you know, you weren't content to just be the underboss. Like, his promo, I think, was deeply unsympathetic. in a lot of ways, because it was like, man, Stacks, you know, you're kind of a scrub. Why weren't you happy to be like second banana to someone who's an achiever?
Oh, and this is gonna lead to a stipulation match for control of the family. Oh God!
No, I think he might lose the family outright.
He's going to lose the family outright and then challenge Stacks for, in like a ladder match, winner gets control of the family, and it's, oh, Tony won his family back. Isn't that great? That kind of thing.
Al, no, but I think Stacks has turned Luca and Rizzo. Yes. No, so I don't think so what I'm saying is Tony can't just climb a ladder and make Rizzo and Luca love him again. I think
you can in NXT, I bet.
Well, yeah, in this NXT you certainly can. In normal existence, that doesn't wash as much. I also think it's time for D'Angelo to just move on.
I think he should be moved up and repackaged.
I do too. I think he should be moved up and repackaged as like kind of an individual, like hitman sort of, you know, like he's his own guy now. And yes, he's up there. Yeah. He's now the Bubba Fett.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Tony D'Angelo. Like, he's basically the Italian Boba Fett. You can kind of cut the organized mafioso thing and just more have the I'll take care of your problem. Yeah, yeah. Problem solver. Yeah, problem solver.
He's a fixer. The fixer. Tony D'Angelo. Yeah.
Seriously. Like, that's actually Heyman shows up with D'Angelo as the fixer to that faction. That would make some sense.
That'd be great.
Right?
Yeah, Stephanie Vaquer versus Jordynne Grace. Looking forward to it. I am a little bit flummoxed here because Jordynne Grace has been taking L's. And I could see them going, okay, Stephanie, you're just too big for NXT. We're going to move you up even though you want to stay. But I think Stephanie Vaquer takes this, and I think Jordynne Grace takes the loss again, and then we just don't know what the hell to do with Jordynne Grace again.
Yeah, I think so. I think so, too. I don't think they're going to have Stephanie lose here. I think her run continues. And I also think the main event, I think we are seeing a title change. So I don't think we're,
All right, but which match do you think is the main event then? Because I was going to do Obafemi versus Miles Bourne next, but we have Joe Hendry and Trick Williams for the TNA World
Title. Yeah, I got Joe Hendry. Well, I mean, that to me is
I think
of...
Hendry Williams main event. So I was going to go to Femi and Bourne. And I think this is going to be one of those. They're going to try and get Miles Bourne winning by losing.
Yes. He's going to get a visual 3. And it's gonna be like there's gonna be he's gonna get a visual 3 count in this match.
Charlie Dempsey.
Charlie Dempsey and or the next person who's challenging. Oh, but who attacked Obafemi this week? Who's the guy who attacked him?
God, I can't even remember.
Yeah, like what? Maybe that guy gets involved in the match.
Let me check here. But I think
they clearly telegraphed this. This isn't going to be a title change. But Miles Bourne's going to be, they're going to try and make him look good in the loss.
Oh, Jasper Troy.
Oh, who could forget Jasper Troy?
The LFG winner. Oh, my God. Really?
Yeah.
Fine. I think this becomes about, you know, the usual. Miles Bourne wants to beat Obafemi on his terms, and that through a shortcut by Charlie Dempsey. And so it becomes the split of the No Quarter Catch Crew, or at least Miles Bourne away from Charlie Dempsey in some manner.
Yeah, okay, so he gets like two opportunities to win this match. One, he gets a visual 3 that doesn't get counted. Two, Charlie Dempsey then comes down and tries to encourage him to cheat. Miles Bourne chooses not to cheat, and then he loses.
Yeah, something like that.
Yep. Just like Chavo Guerrero.
We'll get there. And then in what I think is going to be the main event, Joe Hendry versus Trick Williams for the TNA World Championship. Here's my Babe Ruth call yet again. Trick Williams wins the TNA World Championship with the help of Dark State.
Yeah, I think Trick Williams has to be the leader of Dark State at this point. They stink. They're not doing anything. Joe Hendry got way too much on the go home. And
Chekhov's guitar sitting right next to him as he's playing a guitar.
Yes. That was so good.
As you put it, yeah, there's Chekhov's
oversized guitar. I mean, yes. Did you see the body on that thing? It was like a dreadnought. They normally when they have gimmick guitars, they're like small little parlors. Like this was a gimmicked up Fender dreadnought. I was like, damn, yeah. It went right to Trick Williams' knee. So I mean, in particular, when the trick shot got incapacitated, it seems like Joe Hendry's got the upper hand here. So obviously Trick Williams has got to reclaim the upper hand. I'm with you, Dark State faction invasion of TNA, and he wins the belt.
And we'll end with a preview on Sunday. I'll be doing Fight Game Media's post show for this. That was a mistake on my part because now I actually have to watch this show, which is going to be long because all AEW pay-per-views are long. 52 matches. No, 10 matches announced so far with probably two more to be added to the 0 hour. Starting with, on the 0 hour, Megan Bain and Penelope Ford versus Anna Jay and Harley Cameron, which should be fun. Okay, you know, Anna and Harley are sexing it up. Megan Bain's still awesome, but Megan's been getting wins, so I think Penelope Ford loses, or Megan Bain wins. I can't remember. I don't know which one is going to be, but Megan Bain ain't losing to Anna Jay and Harley Cameron in any form or fashion, and Megan Bain is awesome.
No, Megan Bain ain't losing.
I think Anna Jay pins Penelope Ford to get to a Megan Bain feud.
Okay. I'm going to say Bain and Ford win.
I'm there for that too. I think that's what should happen. I think Megan Bain should. You know what? I'm going to change my mind. Megan Bain wins this, pins Harley, and we try and figure out something to do with Anna and Harley. Where are we going to start then? Okay, here we go. Owen Hart Foundation Cup Tournament Final, the women, because yeah, they're going to bookend this, I think. Match I'm most looking forward to on this card: Jamie Hayter versus Mercedes Moné. My God, Jamie Hayter took a shot on Wednesday coming out of that chair and hitting her head on the back of that rope. But, yeah, so here's the question, Chris. Does Jamie Hayter win this to face Tony at All In? Or are we going to do the money match instead of multiple women's matches necessarily and do Mercedes versus Tony at All In? What say you?
Man, I think the better booking choice here, right, is you give Hayter a win over Moné that's not for the title so you can circle back to Hayter Moné, and then you send Hayter on to go against Toni Storm.
Who do you put Mercedes against then at All In July? Because the original plan we were thinking was Athena, and I think it's going to be hard to heat up Athena to that point, but I think they're going to do it. I disagree. I think... God, you know, I see Hayter and Tony in like London for like Forbidden Door or something.
Right.
I think you got to do Mercedes and Tony because that's the money match and this is your WrestleMania. So I'm going to say Mercedes wins this.
Okay.
I'm not terribly confident in that choice, but I'm here. I'm going to go with it. It's the smart move to me. Hurt Syndicate, Bobby Lashley, and Shelton Benjamin, your tag team champions versus the Ring of Honor tag team champions, the Sons of Texas. The very good on delivery, but some of the material wasn't very good. Dustin Rhodes and Sammy Guevara, who said nothing.
Boy, I thought Dustin was on a struggle. Dustin was fighting mightily against that promo. That was a battle between the English language and Dustin Rhodes for whatever reason. And I didn't think the material was necessarily all that amazing either. Cause I don't really know what he was adding there, you know, to the dynamic of MJF and the Hurt Syndicate and everything. Like he didn't accentuate the tensions between MJF and the Hurt Syndicate, which is to me what the babyface interlocutor is supposed to be doing there. Instead, he's out there and like talking that AEW like legacy promo crap that doesn't actually really build to a story. It's just like, I had a career, and you need to understand during that career, I had several interactions with you, but also you and some legends that you remember from the past. And I will not be dismissed. It's not a story. It's just, it's like them recounting their resume with passion.
And after, what, 4 to 6 weeks, we finally have started getting the Hurtson to get some boos, even though they've been kind of pushed as baby faces in some ways.
Well, I mean, you keep teasing Bobby doing the right thing as an angle. So, like, why wouldn't the audience be a bit confused here?
Hurtson and Nikita are going to win this, and it's going to be because MJF does something to Sammy. That's what I think. And it's going to that'll exacerbate tensions a bit. But, and MJF will say, look, I hurt Sammy for you. I hurt people. But there's no way in hell Dustin and Sammy are winning this, the titles.
God, no, nor should they. Man, if you watch the last couple of weeks of Dustin and Sammy promos and you're like, God, I can't wait to see more of these guys as champions. I do not know what you want out of wrestling. I don't.
FTR, Cash Wheeler, and Dax Harwood with Stokely Hathaway versus Daniel Garcia and Nigel McGuinness. And Daddy Magic somewhere around there with a crowbar.
Wrong Daniel.
Who you got?
FTR.
I think this one's going to be fairly straightforward. I think, yes, Chekhov's crowbar coming into play in some way. I think FTR do win this. I think after the match, I think Nigel gives Daniel Garcia an uppercut and Bryan Danielson makes the save. And I think Nigel goes after Daniel Garcia with the crowbar to facilitate that. But I think this ends up with Nigel McGuinness going back to being a heel and going back to being a heel on color. I don't see him turning babyface. I don't see Daniel Garcia and Nigel winning this necessarily. Seems fairly straightforward to heat up Cash and Dak. So
I mean, maybe Daddy Magic turns on Daniel Garcia.
I thought about that too, and maybe both him and Nigel go, look, you're not listening to either of us. You're a friggin' idiot. Stop this stuff. I don't see the investment in Daniel Garcia that other people do, but
I saw it at one point.
Yes.
But, you know, like, seasons change, my man, you know?
Daniel
like,
Garcia as a heel is more interesting than Daniel Garcia as the babyface.
Right.
Now, if they turned Daniel Garcia against Nigel and Bryan Danielson made the save, all right, now you got my attention. Right?
Right. Yeah, of course. Yeah, no, I think, honestly, the money right now is, you know, Danielson and Nigel reuniting and doing something. And I think for Garcia, I mean, honestly, actually, Garcia and Daddy Magic turning on Nigel and Daniel Bryan making the save at the end would be good.
Yeah, yeah. I'm there for that. In what was an absolutely baffling post-match segment for Heat, Timeless Tony Storm with Luther versus Mina Shirakawa, in which after a match between two babyfaces, because Julia Hart is a babyface with this Brody King, Buddy Matthews, ex Aleister Black stable. Sky Blue, who also last week was a babyface after her comeback in Chicago, and then commentary alludes to them being best friends when both were heels. And they're attacking Mina Shirakawa, who is a babyface, they're attacking Tony Storm, who's a babyface. Mina fights off the other two to attack Tony Storm. So it's four babyfaces fighting each other. Oh, they just want to win. They just want to see who's the best. Blah, blah, blah. Nobody knew who to cheer for because nobody's the outright heel in this.
Right.
And they thought it was Mina, which she isn't yet.
No. I mean... She probably needs to be, especially after that Tony Storm's goofy promos do nothing for me. This is another just heat sink for me. I feel like people like the character and it keeps floating. But, boy, what she was saying was it's so hollow.
It's time to float the $3 million question. Does Mariah May make an appearance of any sort?
I don't think so. I think that
I don't either. I think she's WWE bound. I think she's gone. Stretcher match, Mark Briscoe versus Ricochet. Mark Briscoe finally gets on the main pay-per-view after being the king of Zero Hour, but he's losing here.
Yeah, he's losing here.
Kazuchika Okada versus Speedball Mike Bailey. Again, thanks for coming, Mike Bailey. Boy, you know how to pop the crowd and do fun things. Eat it to
Okada. Why is this a pay-per-view match? I'm confused. Why is this not a TV match?
I feel like they may be inching Okada towards a babyface thing because he didn't say bitch on Dynamite. Maybe out of respect to Renee. I don't know. In another, why is this match on the pay-per-view? They added this yesterday, so that's why it's here. Paragon, Adam Cole, Kyle O'Reilly, and Roderick Strong versus the Don Callis family of Takeshita, Fletcher, and Josh Alexander. God.
Another match that's made for TV.
Good Lord. This should be a Dynamite match, not this. But yeah,
this is the first hour of Dynamite match.
Don Callis family. No cap. Anarchy in the Arena, Kenny Omega, Swerve Strickland, Willow Nightingale, and the Ops of Samoa Joe, Powerhouse Hobbs, and Katsuyori Shibata versus the Death Riders of Jon Moxley, Claudio Castagnoli, Marina Shafir, and Wheeler Yuta, and the Young Bucks of Matt and Nick Jackson.
Well, I think it's really good that they didn't bother putting any stakes on this match this time, because we know in previous years, whenever they put on any stakes to this match, they've meant absolutely nothing afterwards. I'm going to just go ahead and say we're sending everyone home feeling good. Babyfaces win.
I'm going the other way. I think we'll have everybody feeling good because I think they're going to play a story that they think we all know, but we don't. Let me lay this on you. And I think there's a chance Hook comes back as a heel in this, but I don't think it's going to happen here per se. But yes. I went on a rant on my Wednesday show that, yes, again, another Anarchy in the Arena with the Bucks doing power plays and whatnot where there are no stakes about power in AEW. Nice job, everybody. Hear me out. The reason you have Willow and Marina in here is to get heat on man-on-woman violence. Gabe Kidd's going to become involved. You'll notice he's not officially in this match. He's just a guy who works for Moxley. Thank you. I can't remember the champ's name anymore. So what I think happens is Kid does something to Willow Nightingale to get a massive amount of heat.
Oh, but that's when Hook shows up.
I don't think it's Hook. Again, this is an idea that was put to me. And it makes sense because it's what Tony likes. This is where Eddie Kingston comes back with a gasoline can. Because that's also his move, as fire is the move in Anarchy in the Arena. Gabe Kidd was the one who was in the match with Eddie Kingston when Kingston hurt himself with that table spot. Mm. Now, a lot of us don't remember that because a lot of us didn't watch that show. But Tony remembers that because Tony watched the show because he watches everything. And he thinks everybody else watches everything. So I think that's where this happens is I think Kingston comes back to take his revenge, but not before Marina Shafir gets Willow Nightingale to tap out or surrender or whatever. So I think heels win, but you get the feel good of having Eddie Kingston coming down to try and light Gabe Kidd on fire. And he probably succeeds in like getting a leg or something.
Look, if you want to get real heel heat, you have Moxley Bulldog choke out Willow Nightingale.
I'm there for that. I don't think
it would actually be a really interesting version of Anarchy in the Arena if kind of clearly it became obvious that the game was almost a game of protect the queen.
Yeah,
that would actually be an interesting twist on the match format to a certain extent. What's Moxley and the heels make it clear that they'll go after Willow? the baby faces have to now realize, okay, we got to protect Willow. Basically, we have to kind of circle around her and serve as the knights.
I love that idea. I think you might be onto something, because remember how we kind of got here was Moxley doing the Death Rider to Willow?
Yeah.
You may be onto something with that, but I still think it's going to be Gabe Kidd getting the heat, because that's his job in some way. Maybe he does the initial shot, and then Moxley does it to have Willow submit, and then Eddie comes out to try and light everybody on fire. Because they still love that vision of him with the gasoline can and that anarchy in the arena and whatnot.
But so. Especially as I kick out the protect the queen idea, I actually do not hate the idea of having an intergender involvement in one of these matches, provided you're telling the right story.
Yeah, I'm there, and I think that's what it's going to be for. And then, in the main event, for the Owen Hart Foundation Cup Tournament Final, Hangman Adam Page versus Will Ospreay. Let me go a bit into this go-home promo, because a lot of people really liked it, and I...
Really?
Yes.
What?
Yes, because here's what it was. Because it's the disconnect here, Chris, between personal issues make money, but they didn't have personal issues with each other, per se. They had their own personal issues as to why they wanted to win this thing. And when you deconstruct the promo, it's Hangman. Hangman's doing this esoteric, my family doesn't recognize me anymore promo, which is, so he needs to win and go win the title to get his family back, his son. And Ospreay comes off as the biggest douche canoe in the company. Hey, do you still drink? And he's doing the blue collar solid promo. But when you think about it, what he's saying is, hey, I fly back and forth from England first class once a week to do my job for these fans.
Yeah, emissions be damned. I fly constantly. I fly more times in a year than you will in your life.
Yes.
For the people.
I'm sitting here like Chris
yachting,
Rock.
Yachting for the people.
Yeah, I'm sitting here like Chris Rock from Bring the Pain. What you want, a cookie? Everybody does their job. Will, congratulations. You know, and he's just, but he's also combining that with kind of the John Cena. You remember when John Cena would like lose a big title match? He'd come out, he'd just kind of, I'm here to fire up the crowd. We're all here to have a fun night here on WWE Raw. You know, that kind of thing. He's kind of doing that dumb rah-rah promo thing at the same time. And I was just like, on a curve, it was fine as a go-home segment. But over the past couple of days, I realized I hated this segment.
Oh, yeah. No, this look, you there's... There's two types of businesses that say personal issues make money. One of them is professional wrestling. Jeff, do you know what the other one is?
Personal issues make money? Is it
psychological therapy?
Oh, psychological therapy.
And unfortunately, Will Ospreay and Adam Page went out there thinking about the second industry and not the first.
We don't need Tony Schiavone. We need, like, Sigmund Freud cosplay out
every
there.
Week I'm out traveling many miles from my family, and I think many things as I am traveling far distances from my family. I am estranged from my kids. Your kids are not a plot point on the show. And this is a recurring problem with AEW. So often, these wrestlers, when they're not doing the impassioned recitation of their resume promo, they invoke NPCs that are not relevant and cannot draw heat and cannot draw dollars. We don't see Adam Page's kids. We don't give a shit if Adam Page's kids love him or don't, because we don't know who they are. Are Marcus and little Bibke or whatever her name is? We have no idea. Are there five of them? Are there two of them? Is there one and a half of them? I don't know. Are they conjoined? We don't know, because they're not characters on the show. And neither is his wife. So this invocation of like, oh, my wife, my kids, doesn't draw a dime. And then meanwhile, Ospreay, for his part, does the same shit. Whether it is I am going through customs and flying from the United Kingdom to the United States, as you said, yeah, everybody makes it to their job. Congratulations, hero. Or you know, again, Ospreay invoking his wife and his kids, or occasionally his parents, all of whom are NPCs in this AEW Dynamite universe. We don't see Papa Ospreay. We don't see Son Ospreay, little Dubkiss Ospreay. We don't see Dubkiss. We don't see Dubkiss.
Is that a proper British name there?
That's Dubkiss? a proper British name, Roy. Dubkiss.
Meet my Roy,
my little Dubkiss.
I forgot the other part of the Ospreay promo, because he goes from, hey, are you? He offers the guy a beer, and I'm just thinking, okay, here's Chekhov's beer bottle coming into play, which I think may still come into play, but I don't know. I mean, I wanted Paige to say, I only drink with friends. I just want him to say something instead of kind of no-selling it, but at the same time, it's not my point, so let me get to the point. Ospreay, do you still drink? And you know, we're gonna tear it up in your family, and boy, you blew. And then he goes, and then he turns into like a dumbass rah-rah intervention where it's like, I need the best hangman out there, because if the best hangman is out there and I beat him, I know I could beat Moxley. You are an absolute tool bag right now, and I don't know how the crowd is choosing between the two of you.
I think Ospreay continues to dress like a jerk too.
He
dresses like Logan Paul.
Yes, it's like, oh yes, I get it, you're wearing high-end velour sweats and whatever you're doing, but it still makes you look, it makes you look like you have money, but it also makes you look like you're a tool with money.
Yes, right, it's the Gen Alpha with money sort of approach to fashion, where you're much like that generation, like ironically detached from like reasonable fashion choices. So you wear stuff that is sort of loose and ill-fitting, and you have kind of an ironic haircut so that no one can really take a pot shot at anything, because you're not really fully committed to it.
$500 Nikes and all that, yeah.
Yes, right, yeah. Like, you know, $500 JNCO jeans would be more like it, honestly.
That's true, too.
Yeah, right? You know, like, really overpaying. And then if anyone takes a pot shot at that, you're like, yeah, I paid $500 for these JNCO jeans. What now? That's the flex, right? I think Ospreay, for his part, continues. This tone is so strange. He's the company man when the company right now, the people who are nominally in charge of the company, are all heels. So like when he says he's like fighting for the soul of the company and restoring the feeling, all that stuff, it's like, who is he making this appeal to? This is not like a fan-owned company. This is
message
like
board geeks,
right? Like this, but like the AEW, like actual meta universe, is not like a publicly owned company. And I'm not even saying like traded on the market. I'm saying like owned, like the Green Bay Packers, where you can buy shares of the Packers or something like that. Like the person who owns this in universe is Tony Khan and the Young Bucks and Kenny Omega. So like, is Ospreay making the moral appeal to on a week-to-week basis? I continue to be confused by this.
All right, now it's time for the $64,000 question, because you want this title shot, but I need this title shot. All right, both kind of need this title shot, and both need to be one of the people to beat Moxley, I think, because Hangman Adam Page's first title run, I did not like. I thought they did a Daniel Bryan Kane thing by sticking him in there with the Murder Hawk Monster immediately for a 2-week short feud that went nowhere, and then he immediately gets eaten up in that whole Moxley Punk morass. Will Ospreay is your crown jewel free agent. Possibly the best wrestler in the world. Has been doing a lot of L's on the big ones, though. And probably should get a major league push as your champion to see if there's some star power that could then draw some ratings. This is in Texas, though, not Wembley. I am thoroughly confused as to which way they're going to go.
I think they got to go Ospreay, but I would even argue, as you brought the timeline back to Punk, Page has a little penance to pay for his issues back in those days regarding himself and Phil Brooks, too, in terms of hurting the company and not doing the company any favors. So I think it's got to be Ospreay. Part of what Page hurt himself back in those days to a certain extent.
I get that, but man, I think all's forgiven.
I'm sure it is. I'm sure it is. I'm just saying, from a business standpoint, I think it's got to be Ospreay all the way.
To me, they have pitched this to Ospreay that, don't worry, we'll take care of you when you lose. I think it's Hangman. I think they're going with Hangman here. I don't know why, but and I think Ospreay gets like an Omega or an Okada match for a banger. That's what it feels like to me. I don't have any skin in the game. It doesn't matter if I'm wrong. Who cares? But I think they're going to do it with Hangman. I think Hangman's the
But the next thing would be like Moxley versus Ospreay at Wembley, right?
Yes. Or no, at O2.
At O2, which is 30 minutes from his house. It's got to be Ospreay, dude.
Okay. So with that, we'll anything on a lazy river you want to talk about that I didn't get to around?
Not really. I mean, I just, you know, we're talking about the flows of these go homes. I mean, whether we're talking about NXT or Dynamite,
for AEW, this was if you're grading on an AEW curve, this is probably one of their better go homes. Yes, I would agree there.
Yeah, I mean, just, you know, they also had the easy out of let's just have people fight around to end the show.
That drove me nuts. I really didn't want that. I'm like,
I thought that stunk. I mean, I'm hoping that for the people in Albuquerque, that like the people in house at Albuquerque, that was fun. Some of my friends went to the show. I hope they had a good time. I mean, I still thought, look, for a go-home show, I think it's really, you said grading on a curve, and that's, of course, important here. I think it's also just really important for a go-home show. Pretty much every minute of the go-home show needs to be focused on the pay-per-view. All stories on that show. Here's what's happening. Finish the chapter on Sunday. I don't want to see a weekly TV match on the go home show, whether it's Dynamite or NXT or whatever. I don't care if the go home's a lot of non finishes, so long as they're action packed non finishes. And I want the show to honestly be more loaded with heat seeking promos,
yes,
and heat segments.
With you there. You know what? I don't need. On a go-home show, I don't need a mini Anarchy in the Arena. I need to anticipate being able to see an Anarchy in the Arena.
Me too.
And I don't want it, – it's like WWE used to do this all the time under Vince, where it's like, oh, it's Royal Rumble time. So on the go-home, everybody in the Royal Rumble is going to come out and have like a mini Royal Rumble. You know, you got me sold. I'm here for the intrigue. I'm not here for the visual of the match you're actually going to do. In a few days, I give me the heat. Tell me why this matters. Tell me why I should want to see the fight. Yeah.
I mean, especially when you got a guy like Samoa Joe.
God, yes.
Right? This man absolutely could talk and tell the story, especially juxtaposed against Moxley. These guys are both talkers. They're storytellers. They actually can create compelling tension between one another. I want 10, 15 minutes about that.
Just coming out saying, I'm going to kill all six of you at some point, and I'm coming, and after I'm done with one
And after
person,
I'm done with that, John, I know you've been scared of me. I know you're running from me. I want that title.
I want to hear the Samoa Joe, yeah, we're going to start out 6-on-6, but eventually I'm going to beat my guy half to death, and then I'm coming after this guy. Then I'm coming after this guy. And I'm like, oh, hell yeah, baby. I'm going to see Samoa Joe beat. And then I'm coming after Marina Shafir. And I'll be like, oh, here we go. Samoa Joe and Marina Shafir. I'm here for this. You know, whatever, man. Get me hyped for that.
Right.
As opposed
I just want to
tables. And
stuff. Right. Yeah. Tables and then big action spots. Oh, here's the fire extinguisher. I want Willow and Marina to square off. I want Marina to finally have to say something. I want Willow to come out there and basically like talk at Marina for 10 minutes. And then Marina ends it by saying two sentences. And like, that's the heat. And Anarchy in the Arena, not using it as a vehicle for launching a bunch of stories is to me just criminal misusage of a match like this with such a large cast.
Yeah.
The large cast to me is not merely about the spectacle of having 12 people all hit each other with cars at the same time. It's got to be about the stories.
We'll end it there. Chris has made his selection for Vader Club this week. It is Spring Stampede 98, Chavo Jr. versus Ultimo Guerrero. Chris, the floor is yours.
Look, our Ultimo Dragon.
Ultimo Dragon. What did I say? Ultimo Guerrero?
Ultimo Guerrero, yeah.
Oh, well, sorry about that. It's Ultimo Dragon.
A little merger here. Chavo in 98, I think, transitions to an above-average, extremely serviceable wrestler. And this is in the... what I think was a very strong angle for both Chavo and Eddie, where Eddie becomes a heel and is trying to seduce his cousin to the dark side. I think it's effective because Eddie starts getting more and more heat with the crowd and more engagement from the crowd, which is ultimately, I think, like this heel run here really is what actually builds his deeper crowd connection. He was always liked as a babyface, but it's not until he becomes cheat to win Eddie Guerrero. That one, he obviously pioneers all the stuff that he would later refine into Latino Heat. But two, is really able to do a lot more character work, both inside the ring and outside the ring as a manager. I think he's a very effective valet in this match, working the story that he needs to work. For his part, Ultimo Dragon in a babyface role, I love him as a heel. I think I prefer him slightly as a heel, but every time Ultimo Dragon's a babyface, he's excellent because he has such a diversity in his moveset that he really is able to find the pieces of offense that are the most serviceable for the requisite babyface spots, whether it's the handspring in the corner that he transitions into a dropkick or even the taekwondo-style kick combinations that he does. I think those are really good for getting heat, and I enjoyed this match. Let me toss it to you real quick before we pick back up.
Number one, the thing that came out most to me is just how much Dominic Mysterio looks like Eddie Guerrero. This version of Eddie Guerrero in 98. Good Lord. I like the match. I like them all. I think Ultimo Dragon, and God bless them, they finally got his name right. They never called him Ultimate Dragon once on this show. I mean, he had been in the company for a couple of years, so whatever. But he's the guy who never lost his aura because of that picture of him with like 9 titles or however many he had.
The J Crown and also the video games. He was taken care of very well in the video games. Don't sleep on that.
I don't, but I was not a wrestling video gamer at this point. So I lean on you for that, so
yeah,
I would agree.
No, he was always a very, very strong pick in a video game.
But, I mean, he's a guy, babyface or heel, he has the aura because, look, he came out with almost every title that existed for him, so he never needed it. Chavo...
He also had a high belt holding rate. You know, we hear about that with Gunther. Dragon's a guy who pretty regularly had a title around his waist, and not just the Jade Crown, whether it was the TV title or the Cruiserweight title. He was always holding something.
I don't like this story as much as you do because I just want Eddie and Ultimo Guerrero. I mean, Ultimo Dragon over and over and over again, and it just becomes about the. But I will agree with you that Eddie Guerrero was fantastic as a valet. On this match especially, the verbalism.
Yeah.
And for me, it really helped me get back into the match, whereas Bobby Heenan's doing race-baiting stuff with, they smell like salsa. And what? And
no, blood is thicker than salsa made me cringe. Yeah.
Yes. Mike Tenay, again, out here to do yeoman's work where he treats this seriously and everybody else just wants to get to the NWO. Chavo Guerrero's a good worker. I like watching Chavo Guerrero, but man, he is Zeppo Marx in the Guerrero family. It's a guy that you know has comedy chops and is great playing the straight man in the comedy thing, but he has family members who are just absolutely waxing him on screen, and Mondo and Hector and Eddie, and he is Zeppo Marx, man. And, you know, they tried to break him away a few times in other companies away from him, and the problem was they'd make him part of the Guerrero family, and it's a little bit like the Garzas on WWE now and whatever. It's like the Guerreros become a blob with the guy you care about and the guy you don't. And he never really broke out of that shadow. And I think it's kind of a shame, but also somewhat expected. I mean, I do like him a lot. I thought his runs in Lucha Underground were good. The AEW run he had as a manager was pretty good. You know, he's never bad. He's never unwelcome to me. Even the stuff with the horse, you know, the horse on a stick stuff that he was doing, like Saturday and Eddie and Pepe.
Yeah.
I mean, that was good stuff.
Yes.
But
that was good.
That's all I'm going to say is, but, you know, continue on anything else.
Yeah,
you want to say.
No. So like, I'm with you on Chavo. He's such an interesting question. Cause I'll watch him wrestle. And I'll go, if he wasn't in the Guerreros, would he have done better or worse? Cause he's not bad. And in part, what really hurts him comparatively is that he's getting graded on the Guerrero curve.
Yes.
Which is a brutal curve.
But I will tell you, I think he's better off.
Yes,
I'll tell you why. Because he's one of the few guys pigeonholed as luchador / cruiserweights. Because the cruiserweights also had this problem, too, if you look at, like, Malenko at some point. Where he could speak English. And he could cut really strong promos. I mean, like, Juventud's funny.
No, he was a character guy. That's kind of where I was going with this, too, is especially in that vintage, he was consistently good at storytelling in the ring with limited microphone usage. He was doing it semi-visually or through the process of the match and stuff. And that got you a long way in WCW.
Yeah, but his character was Eddie's nephew all the time. And he could never get out of that. Yeah.
And that's what I'm saying. If he was on his own track, if he wasn't working with that, maybe he could have become kind of like a little bit of a perennial fan favorite, like, you know, Chavo and Billy Kidman become kind of like, you know, buddies on screen, you know, that sort of thing.
No, you'd have certain luchadors and certain cruiserweights get that hot streak. Like Psicosis had one at one point in WCW where he was just white hot. You know, everybody kind of got that mini Ray push. And so like Dean Malenko came in as a killer and then he cooled off and then he did the Jericho feud where he dressed as Halloween and got that massive pop after that at the Hoovy when he became the Juice or whatever.
Unmasking Hoovy was actually the Jericho feud where he unmasked Hoovy was like the best thing that ever happened for Hoovy.
So Silver King and El Dandy kind of had their moments. And of course, you know, La Parca became La Parca. You know, everybody kind of had their moment in the sun. And Chavo really, he did because he's always attached at the hip with the Guerrero name.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And I think, yes, he could have been much more of a factor on either side, babyface or heel, if he hadn't been, you know, saddled or hadn't been burdened with the name. Because the work's there. Look, there's some nice moves. So why am I saying this? I think the Brainbuster looks good.
Yes.
I actually, in particular, really love the finishing sequence of this match. I love when he goes for the tornado DDT and it gets reversed into the Dragon Sleeper. I just think that's a really cool, I mean, it's not like the most inventive move ever, but it is a cool move that you don't see often. And I like seeing something that actually felt organic too. It made sense. Yeah. Oh, okay. Dragon has enough time being led into the turnbuckle here to think about and intuit, okay, I'm getting set up for the tornado DDT here. I can catch him right as he's getting that side leverage and you know, transition him in. I liked it. I like the finish in particular. I picked it out because it had a high star rating. You know, and that's a lot of times, you know, that's my starting point. I also picked it out because my first pick I had already apparently watched, as I realized when I saw a key spot in it. And I was like, no, we've done this match. I like this match.
I'll tip my hand to my Vader Club for next week. I've been watching a lot of Wahoo and Tully in various incarnations, so it's going to involve one of them probably. Might involve both of them. There's an interesting match which involves a bull rope and a strap. In terms of it's Flair and Tully versus Wahoo and Dusty. It's very interesting. That'll be next week. Let's end it there. You can follow me on X at CrapGame13. You can just follow the show at Shake Them Ropes. I also do shows on Fight Game Media. I'll be doing the post show after Double or Nothing with Garrett Gonzalez and Jeremy Finestone. I'll be on their channel live and in your audio pods the next day. I also do the Dynamite Show on Wednesdays, 20 minutes after Paul Ace Fontaine and I go live on YouTube, and those also drop in your podcatchers for free the next day. I'd appreciate the patronage. Chris, what you got?
I am doing an album right now. It will be out on Spotify sometime over the summer. If you're not subscribed to my Spotify already, do so on Chris Novembrino. The project will probably have a name. I have not decided on what the project name I'm releasing the album under, but I'll probably dual release it too, just to make it easier for people. You can get music lessons from me. Go ahead and message me on Instagram, DOCTOR_NOV. And other than that, man, you know, think about your future.
That's like Batman 89. What's the name of the bad cop?
I was thinking more like the special. Stop.
Okay, we'll go with that
around,
too.
Try to think of your future.
And
hi, I'm Case Lowe, co-host of the Open the Voice Gate podcast. The one question I'm constantly asked when it comes to Dragon Gate is, how do I get into the promotion? Well, stop asking and start listening to the Open the Voice Gate podcast, released every Wednesday on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. For exclusive news and show reviews, look no further than the leader in Dragon Gate coverage, Open the Voice Gate.
Hey, baseball fans, it's time to swing big on your bets this season. Step up to the plate with an odds boost token from BetMGM, an official sports betting partner of Major League Baseball. No opt-in is required. Just log into your BetMGM account to receive your odds boost token. Then, place a bet on any MLB game and activate your token. If your boosted bet hits, you'll score a bigger payout, no matter the showdown. BetMGM is your betting home for baseball. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com. For terms. 21 plus only. This U.S. promotion offer not available in Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. For New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. For Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary and expire in 1 to 7 days. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Why choose a Sleep Number smart bed?
Can I make my side softer?
Can I make my side firmer?
Can we sleep cooler?
Sleep Number does that. Cools up to 8 times faster and lets you choose your ideal comfort on either side. Your Sleep Number setting.
It's the Sleep Number Everything Smart Bed Sale. Every smart bed and base are on sale during our Memorial Day event. Up to 50% off, plus free home delivery. Limited time. Exclusively to Sleep Number store near you. Learn more at sleepnumber.com.